You're now listening to the Inside Out Podcast with Jimmy Hunt. Get it.
Welcome to Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. My job is simple, to improve my mental fitness through any means possible and deconstruct what works, what doesn't, what I think may be able to help you become mentally fitter. And we're going to keep talking today about my trip from the tip to the toe of New Zealand, walking the entire length of Te Araroa. This is part two. If you haven't listened to part one, I don't know what to tell you. There's no point really being here. Well, there is. I mean, I'm going to say some stuff, but it's always better if you listen to part ones before you watch part twos. So I'm here again with my lovely wife, Libby Grace. She's waving to you because apparently she doesn't want to talk.
I'm waving at you. Hi, everybody. Hello, right. Jimmy Hunt. Thank you for having me.
We are going to continue straight on with some of the questions that were submitted by people and some that you've had yourself because you thought they were good. About my walk. So go. Okay. Ask me a question.
Excellent. All right. So you talk about doing the trail and it being in amongst nature and everything. So there's one really interesting question here that someone has asked. If you had to trade places with any animal you encountered on your journey, which one would it be and why?
All right. Well, that's pretty easy for me. I know the answer to that question. It is my favorite animal on the trail. It is the Pee Waka Waka. One, because it has the coolest name. But two, because they're my little spirit animal, my little bird, the New Zealand fan tail. And interesting story. There was a Dutch girl that was with me for a little bit. Basically, a Pee Waka Waka came and hung with us for quite a while. And I was explaining to her the Maori concept that they are messengers from the underworld, the other side, past friends, family members, loved ones come back to just send you a message. And this girl just starts crying. And I didn't realize that she'd lost her mother in the last 12 months.
Wow.
And very recently, she sent me a message on Instagram and said, "What is your postal address?" And I said, "Well, don't send anything by mail to Mexico.
It will never arrive."
And so I gave her my New Zealand postal address. And tomorrow I'm going to New Zealand, so I'll be able to pick it up. But I got my mother to open it when it turned up. And she has drawn and sent me a lino cut print of a Pee Waka Waka.
That's so sweet.
To say thank you. And so, and the inscription was something around how, you know, I'll never know how much it meant to her to feel that and know that, to have her mother turn up. Just, she felt presence with her then. And so that was really cute. And I had a lot of them follow me a lot of the way. And
so why would you want to be one? Why would you want to change?
Oh, they're just
one?
Cool. They talk a lot. Yeah. So there we go. And they flutter around a lot.
And then
don't
you
sit
do a
still.
Bit of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they really are just the bird embodiment.
And they're cute as fuck.
They are cute. I was going to say at the beginning, those are little cuties.
Yeah,
they are
exactly.
Sweet.
So yeah, I was going to swap with anything. But yeah, like New Zealand doesn't have many animals.
Did you see many animals? Are there many animals on the trail?
Animals.
It's just birds.
Cows. Lots of feral goats. New Zealand has a feral goat problem. There's shitloads of them.
Oh, my God.
Feral goats, cows.
Can a goat be feral?
Yeah.
Oh. I feel like feral is like an attitude more than a
situation. Oh, yeah. They call them feral because they just destroy everything.
They do. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's why they're a pest. So, yeah.
Okay.
Don't go on New Zealand's longest walk to see
cute little animals. All right.
See the nature? Yes. Animals? No.
Okay. Okay, next question. Audience question. Let's just pick a random one. This is a good one. What did you learn about yourself that no self-help book could have taught you? We all love a good self-help book. You've written a couple.
Yeah. I think what it teaches you is the practice of some of the self-help techniques, right?
Right.
So, for example, I mean, the most famous example of it is The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, but, you know, Be Here Now by Ram Dass, and, you know, like, just there's so many philosophical self-help books that will wax lyrical about
the moment.
The moment. And I think if you go on a walk of this length without distractions, you will be able to go, oh, I get what they mean by that. Like, I can feel it. I can see it. And you're like, yeah, cool. Okay. I get that. And I think that for anybody else as well, like, you are your own self-help book if you sit with yourself for long enough.
Mm.
Like, you'll have your own epiphanies, your own understandings, your perspectives will change if you sit long enough with yourself. But the problem is we spend so much time going to self-help books or podcasts or audiobooks, whatever it is, we go outwards looking for answers instead of inwards. And so I think a walk like this helps you go inwards.
Okay, well then the lead on follow-on question from that, which fits quite nicely, I want to know if your entire walk was compressed into a single impactful lesson, what would it be? So what did your self-help, your inner self-help book teach you? What was the most impactful lesson? This is the longest you've ever paused in your life.
I know. And it's like I won't even edit that pause out of the final one.
I'm freaking out right now. What's going on?
Yeah, like I think if you were going to boil it down, I'll boil it down to one word.
Okay.
And that is trust.
Nice.
And I quite often use the example of, like, I think the ultimate trust are those Buddhist monks that travel,
mm-hmm.
that wander, that go and be places, and they literally do not know where their next meal's coming from. They do not know where they're going to sleep that night. They just trust that it will all work out for them. They don't freak out about it. They don't get scared. They don't worry. They trust. And I think that if I think back to some of the people on the trail, they do not trust.
Right.
So
worrying about stuff.
Almost neurotic about planning, mm-hmm. you know, where everything is, who it's going to be, how they're going to do it. And I mean, it's towards my nature anyway, but like I just trusted that it would all work out.
Yeah.
And like, people turn up and they're like, where are you going tomorrow? I'm like, I don't know. How are you getting there? Well, one, walking. but I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? Which direction? I don't know. And I would just sort of get up and go, okay, I feel like I should go here.
Yeah.
And then I might get there and go, I don't feel like I should be here. I feel like I should go a bit further. You go a bit further.
Mm.
And I trusted in the complete random strangers that I stayed with.
Yeah.
The random strangers that came and picked me up and they just took me away and put me in, you know, their cars and their houses. I'm like, oh, I don't know you.
But yeah.
Like, yeah, you just trust.
Yeah.
That it's going to work out. That everyone has your best interest at heart. Like, I just trusted. And I think it was a beautiful exercise in trust that allowed me to go, oh, yeah. Like, it does work out when you let it.
Yeah. I feel like along with the trust component, you would learn that acceptance, having a bit of stoicism about, okay, it didn't work out how I maybe needed it to or wanted it to work out today, but here I am, this is what I'm doing, and I can accept this and then trust that this is the right place I'm supposed to be here doing this regardless if it didn't meet my expectation.
Yeah, the best example, I think, or the first example that comes to my mind of that was when I fell over in the forest that day. And I showed you the video like last week.
You really should have showed me that video a lot sooner. I didn't know that had happened to you.
It took me like 15 or 20 minutes to get my face off the dirt because I was in so much pain I couldn't move. I turned my phone on and videoed it so my wife could see it.
Yeah, bearing in mind, you left on this adventure nearly a year ago and I saw this video a week ago.
Yeah, I just remembered. And like I was pretty delirious in pain, and
yeah, I thought you would eat in some kind of mushroom or yeah. something the way the video looked.
But I was very calm in the video.
You were very
overly calm.
Yeah, scarily calm. You were like, everything's okay. I was like, okay.
I can't get up. I can't lift my head.
I may have broken my entire body.
But everything's okay.
Yeah.
And I ended up spending that night pretty much there.
You, wait, what? You yeah. didn't tell me that.
Yeah. So I ended up going maybe a couple of hundred meters further.
And just pitching your tent.
Finding a flat spot, and I pitched my tent in there.
Wow.
And then... went to bed at like 6:30.
Mm-hmm. Crashed.
And
out.
I had really quite a mystical experience in there, in terms of like it was quite psychedelic. It was. I had really crazy dreams. Like I asked the universe to fix my ankle and fix my body, and I woke up at 6 o'clock the next morning feeling fine. And I packed my stuff up and powered on.
Of course you did. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, yeah.
Trust.
I don't love seeing those videos, but as long as you're okay at the end of it.
I always am.
You always are. You're an annoying human that way.
Yeah, but this happened a couple of weeks ago. We'll tell another hiking story. Because we went on a big crazy hike about 3 weeks ago, just north of where we live here in Puerto Escondido, and it was a big exploratory hike. We didn't really know where we were going. We were trying to figure it out. And there was me and Eric, who run the hikes, and then there was five other people. And ladies and gentlemen, I legitimately, as the leader of this hike, got stuck in quicksand.
Just like the movies. When like, you were a kid,
yeah,
like, biggest fear on earth was getting stuck in quicksand.
I got stuck in quicksand. And it originally, like, everyone kind of laughed at me. And I was kind of laughing. I was like, don't come in here. Like, everyone go around. Ha, 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 ha. Fuck, I'm stuck.
Ugh.
And it took all of my effort to get out. And then about 5 minutes down the trail... Not there was a trail, 5 minutes down the river that we were trying to navigate in the middle of nowhere. I'd never felt a tiredness like that in my entire life. And I've hiked a lot of places and never been tired. And like I've never felt a tiredness like that. And then in order to get out, we were way late. Darkness was coming. And we ended up having to go up this hill and my whole body started cramping. Like every part of my body was just in spasm. And we had to send five of the people ahead, Eric and four of them, and one of the guys who's quite capable stayed with me. And funnily enough, the other people got lost. We caught up to them. But we ended up getting out of the jungle in a giant thunderstorm about 2 hours after dark, when we're just going through the jungle in pitch blackness. We've got the lights on our phones to get us out, everything. And I'm spasming like every 50 meters. I'm on the ground rolling and crying and fucking making sounds. And like the entire time, I'm like, I'll be fine. Like I trust that this is going to work out. Even if I have to stay the night, I'll be fine. If I have to, whatever, I'll be fine. And it's just that trust. That yeah. I have the skills, I have the knowledge, I have the understandings, and that it will all work out. And it did.
And then there's my perspective, because I didn't go on this particular hike. And there were some friends over from New Zealand, friends of friends who were staying here. And we'd arranged to meet them for dinner at 7 p.m. So at 10 to 7, I get in the car, start driving to the other side of town to meet them. And I get a call or a... Yeah, I get a call or a text from you. Can't remember. A call.
You called me back. I sent you a message.
Right. You sent me a message saying something along the lines of, I'm going to be a bit late. I've had a bit of trouble. And I thought,
don't want to alarm you.
You didn't say.
Because I got to the top of a hill and there was like.
Some reception.
And it was random. We're in the middle of nowhere. I couldn't believe that got through.
But you didn't even say, not trying to alarm you. You just said, going to be a bit late. I've had a bit of trouble. So I called thinking, well, I'll see if you're going to be 10 minutes late, 20, whatever. call goes through, you pick up, hello, there's like, I'm like, oh my God, what is going on? Can't hear him. So I text saying something like, am I still meeting these people for dinner? And then I just get no. And I was like, okay, what's going on?
Baby.
2.5 hours later, he rolls in the house, dripping wet, absolutely broken human being.
A thunderstorm.
It was, from my point of view, not ideal, wondering if he was stuck. Because you never get home after dark, usually.
It's like 10 o'clock I got home.
It was pretty late. Like, normally it's right after sunset. I know you've made it back to the car at least, and you're basically maybe driving back, but...
Point is, baby, I was fine.
You're always fine, but it doesn't mean that people don't worry about you.
Moving on, next question.
All right. Oh, I think this is a good one. We haven't discussed the concept or the thing that is trail angels. So somebody has asked, did you have any good experiences with trail angels? So explain what they are and if you had any good experiences.
Trail angels are people who live on or near the trail and offer their services usually for free, but it's becoming a bit more commercialized in order just for people to cover costs, for example. And so these are people that will let you stay at their house, eat their food, whatever. But yeah, now there's more and more people who are like, for $10 you can stay the night, which is still a bargain. Still a great deal.
Wow.
Yeah, it just covers the hot water costs and electricity and stuff.
Yeah, so it should.
Exactly. I've got no drama with that. I'm very lucky that I have some nice people that listen to my podcast and follow me on social media. And what I found very interesting was, like, Lila the Waikato was very specific, for example. World's Biggest Water Slide was very general. And this one was the first sort of adventure where I actually genuinely needed people's help, because I had nothing but the pack on my back. Mm. And so... in the very simplest form, I had a bunch of people fucking meet me on the beach with a can of ginger ale. to slightly more complicated, people found me in a forest with tape for my Achilles. But I also just had a lot of people who were like, please come stay with me because you're walking through here. And I had people say, please come stay with me. And I'm like, that's nowhere near the trail. And they were like, well, I'll come pick you up from the trail. You can stay with me, and then I'll drop you back at the trail.
Like, love it.
Okay.
Okay.
And so it was just another really good example of giving people an opportunity to help and be generous, and because they want that opportunity.
Yeah.
And we as humans do not give people that opportunity enough.
Mm.
You know, there's not enough times I'm like, hey, I'm in so-and-so, and I'd love it if someone took me in, or, you know, took me out for dinner or whatever. Like, you don't ask that, right?
Yeah.
Yet there's people that want to actually do that. And so this adventure really gave me that opportunity, and I had nothing but ultimate kindness by stranger and follower and friend the whole way down.
But not specifically a trail angel. These were your own personal angels, really.
Yeah, they were. I guess the only actual real example of that in Tikawiti, I ended up hurting myself, and it happened to be the same day that you were having some serious trouble here and were bawling your eyes out to me on the phone.
Doesn't sound like me.
And sounds exactly like you at that stage. And there was just no reception anywhere, and Tikawiti was the only place, and nothing in Tikawiti. There's not even a campground in Tikawiti.
Right.
And I ended up ringing this woman whose name got passed on from three people, and they had a whole separate cottage. And they gave me, and they let me stay there.
Amazing.
And I was as filthy as you could get as being a human. And her husband, like, they're in their 80s, they're retired farmers. Her husband, he's like, give me all your clothes. I'll go wash them all. Right? Like, bro, you don't have to. Like, I mean, just give me a hose. I need to get all the – he's like,
I was farming for 60 years. I know how to get mud out of clothes.
Oh, that's like, so cute. Like,
all right, bro. And they were really lovely, really lovely. And I had no idea who they were.
Oh, that's brilliant. And so, okay, let's move on to another question. I've got a couple of deep ones here. I might leave them to the end. Here's a cute one. Was there a moment when you felt like a character in a movie? And if so, what was the scene and what role did you play?
I don't know.
I feel like walking through New Zealand to people who are not from New Zealand would just feel like you're in a movie the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, you're
it looks like a movie.
You're literally in a bunch of movies. So many of the Google Earth, sorry, the Google Map things are, this is where the fucking Troll Kingdom is or whatever they call them.
I don't know.
One of the Lord of the
The orcs?
Like the trolley type ones that live underground.
I don't know. The orcs?
No, they're the good ones.
Orcs are not good.
No, I know. I'm saying the good ones. You've got the elves.
We should not be having this conversation. Neither of us are into fantasy. Let's move on.
Yeah, dwarves.
Okay.
The dwarves live under the hills.
Cute. All right, let's go.
One of those ones. No, the answer is I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I think my life is kind of movie-like. Like, I think there's lots of situations.
We are in a simulation,
this
remember.
This is just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. This kind of felt like a movie and, like, main character shit. Once I walked 7 kilometers in the wrong direction to get reception to talk to you when you were in a crisis here. With our house build.
That's true, love.
Yes, it is. And then I wanted to hitchhike back so I didn't have to walk that way back. And so I go to the dairy, I buy a pie, I walk out of the dairy and this guy's like, oh, I put my thumb out and the first guy comes out after behind me in the dairy and goes, oh, I better pick up one of the best tennis players in New Zealand.
What?
And I was like, what? and he goes, I played doubles against you last year and you kicked my ass.
Hello. Where were you?
In the middle of North Island somewhere, in the middle of nowhere.
But he would have been from Tauranga Bay Plenty.
Yeah, he was from Tauranga and he'd gone and done a bike trail.
Oh, how funny. So
he picked me up. And then when I was in Ashburton and I was hitchhiking to get back to the trail, car drove past, pulls over harshly like 200 meters out in front and then reverses all the way back to me.
That's a film
scene. Like, and she's like, Jimmy Hunt. I'm like, hi. She's like, I follow you on Instagram.
Oh,
I was
amazing.
Like, awesome. And so, yeah, they were kind of like movie-like scenes.
I feel like, and going back a little bit to your Trail Angels or your Jimmy's Angels, the person who's giving you the assistance and wants to help maybe doesn't realize at the time that that could be one of the best decisions they've ever made because, I mean, you annoy the hell out of me. You're a pain in my butt most of the time, and that's because I spend most of my time with you. But to be able to have an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours in your company is kind of life-changing for a lot of people, right? You don't just turn up at someone's house, have dinner and small talk and go to bed and say thank you very much.
No.
You actually are constantly 24 hours a day, if you could stay awake that long, mentoring, coaching, teaching people just because that's your nature.
Yeah.
So you're on this planet to do a job. You do your job by, you know, doing the corporate stuff, by doing the podcast stuff, the social stuff. But when you're in a one-on-one situation with someone, they are getting so much benefit from your wisdom and from your kindness and from your generosity and just from your wisdom especially. That, you know, it's a...
I try to leave people better than I found them.
And that, but you don't try, like you just do. And so if someone picking you up in their car, like you having this situation where even if they have 40 minutes to drop you off somewhere, you never just talk about the weather and whatever.
Yeah.
You're actually getting, you know, very deep and meaningful. So it's a
I had a guy drive me 40 minutes literally, so he said, so I could spend 40 more minutes with you.
That's it, right?
And I was like, oh, that's lovely.
Because you give them more than they are giving you.
Yeah.
They're giving them you the assistance, a car ride or a place to stay, but their life is enriched by meeting you. So it really is a win in the column of the person helping you more than it is
very
helping
nice
them.
To say thank you.
Well, you paid me, so anyway. Okay, one more not so deep one, and then we'll end with a few that might make you think. Okay, if you could time travel to one day of your journey and tell yourself one thing, what would it be?
That's another question I'm going to pause on for a second. If I could time travel.
Everyone's switched off.
That's right, I'm going to edit that big pause out. Okay, good. That's fine. I'd edit myself to...
You would edit yourself.
I would time travel to the ferry between the North and South Island where you couldn't see like 30 meters off the bow of the boat.
Right.
And I'd walk through three hurricanes and it had rained for 85% of the days on the trail. And I would say... It's not going to rain on you another day on this trip. And I would have just gone.
Change the weather.
Oh, thank
so
you.
Not
it didn't.
Only-
it didn't rain on me one more day.
Right.
Like,
right,
that's right. The truth. I could
oh,
tell you.
Oh, you would tell yourself, okay.
Yeah. Right. I'd tell myself that, like, it's not going to rain again.
Right. I got
and
you.
I would have just had a really nice ferry ride.
Right.
And because I remember getting to Picton in the absolute pouring rain and going, fuck, this just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And that rain had really affected everybody on the trail, me far less than a lot of other people. But I was still just getting to this point of like, oh, it's going to keep going.
Yeah.
And
because everything you own is wet.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
And then, yeah, the next day it was overcast but not raining. And then it never rained on me one more day in the South Island.
It's fascinating. Yeah. So you would have given yourself that peace of mind. Yes, we're good now. Enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sweet.
All right. Okay. So how do you feel about yourself now after completing it? And I guess by that we mean, has it changed your perspective of you as a person? Has it given you some kind of, not that you need any confidence boost?
Well, that's exactly it. So I was 1,000% walking taller when I finished it.
Okay.
Like, and how much of that was literally posture from walking for so long?
And having to carry a backpack.
But, like, you cannot walk from the top to the bottom and make it without having a massive boost in confidence.
Right.
And like you said, I don't need a massive boost in confidence, but I saw it with so many other people.
Amazing.
And I felt it myself as well. And it's just another really nice pat on the back that says, you can do it. Like, you do whatever the hell you want. And for me, that's more a confirmation, but for so many others, that was permission.
Right.
And like, go, like just go. And when you are in the forums and the groups and stuff like that, so many people will be like, this was the start of the rest of my life.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So many people went on to do this, went on to do that because of
the confidence,
walking the TA and the confidence to trust, the confidence to be able to keep going.
And overcoming.
Yep.
Can't even imagine. That's it. Like, from the start to the finish, you're overcoming something.
Everything.
Every day.
At all times. Yeah. Nothing makes this easy for you.
It's a difficult journey, no matter who you are.
At all times. Uh-huh. Even the downhill parts are difficult.
Yeah.
Right? And so you're consistently overcoming everything in front of you, and you do it.
Mm.
You keep doing it. And so every time you do it once, you get more confidence to do it the second time. And then bang, 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 bang. And suddenly, you know, 90 to 150 days later, you've overcome everything. And you're like, well, when I go home, I can overcome that and that and that and that and that.
I feel like there's a lot to be said for the fact that you gain that confidence because you just have to do it again. Even if everything in your body and mind is saying, no, and if you were at home in the comfort of your normal everyday life, if something was difficult and you had to do it, you could say, oh, you know what? Maybe I'm not going to do that today. I might wait a week or whatever, procrastinate on the difficult thing. Yeah. But it sounds like from your experiences and from what we know of the trail, you don't have a choice because you can't stay stuck in the wilderness. So you have to go and do the difficult thing day after day after day after day.
Yep.
And that then breeds more confidence in itself. Yep. Because you overcome challenges by force that then become, oh, actually I can do this. So that momentum builds, yeah?
Yeah, like absolutely. So it was one of the questions that was previous. It's probably one of the questions that's coming up. But like again, one of the biggest lessons for the entire thing is turn up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just turn up. And I mean, there's a bunch of quotes, there's a bunch of stats and everything, but like, you know, turning up is pretty much like 90% of life.
Yeah.
It's not confidence. It's not skill. It's not experience. It's just turning up.
Yeah.
Because most people don't turn up.
Yeah.
Most people don't walk the TA. Most people don't turn up to the things that are hard.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just turn up, you're better than 99% already. And then if you turn up and move forward, boom, that's the answer to everything.
Mm.
Because it is the only way, literally the only way that you get from the top to the bottom is you turn up and you walk again.
Yeah.
Now, for me, it's turn up and walk 40 Ks. So some days I didn't feel like walking 40 Ks. And so you turn up and you're like, oh, this is going to be tough to walk 40 Ks. But I turned up and I did it anyway.
Right.
Other people, it's going to be tough today to turn up and walk 20 Ks.
Yeah.
But 20 Ks is still going to get them done in 150, 160 days, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're still going to get there in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing half my distance, right? But they just have to turn up and walk those 20 Ks.
Yeah.
When they don't feel like doing it. And like, I think that is one of the biggest lessons that people learn on that trail is that I don't feel like getting up, but I get up anyway and I go do it.
And that's just a metaphor for life,
yeah.
Right? Everything difficult in your life, if I yeah. just go and do it, it's going to be done and I'm going to have gained so much from that experience.
Yeah. So the other point that I like to make about this, and again, this is not a question you've asked. It might be one for the future.
There's literally one question left and you haven't got them yet.
So at the end, the last 3 weeks, I think I averaged over a marathon a day for the last 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And that was over mountain ranges. So I did
insane.
More than a marathon every day for 3 weeks with a backpack on over mountain ranges and swamp forests. And I remember you calling. I remember calling you one day because I was literally. It was up above Bluff, and there's a radio tower.
Oh yeah,
a cell phone, like a big one that does most of Southland.
Yeah.
And so I had good reception. And I was running.
Yeah.
And I was running down a hill. And I ran for 4Ks down a hill with a pack on. And I don't run anywhere. I hate running. And I said to you, baby, I think I'm an athlete.
Yeah.
Because that day I did, I think, almost 50 Ks through a swamp forest, which is, and again, a swamp forest sounds like it should be low. It's a swamp forest on the top of a hill. I don't know how it works. And I was like, this is what athletes do.
Yeah.
Because I did a marathon yesterday as well, and I'm doing one tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, this is what athletes do. I was like, holy shit, how did I become an athlete?
Yeah.
And the answer is really simple. I turned up every day in my growth zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are, I mean, there's many analogies for it, but there's the comfort zone, the growth zone, and the danger zone. So imagine if I was at Cape Reinga and I was like, for the next 3 weeks, I'm going to do marathons every day.
Danger zone.
Danger zone. Yeah. Right? And I'm going to break and die.
Yeah.
But because this is the last 3 weeks and I've built up my fitness all this time, then that's just my growth zone.
Mm.
Right? And so because I'm doing these crazy distances and speeds at the end, I'm passing lots and lots of people.
Yeah.
And so I'm talking to them. I'm like, how many Ks are you doing today? And they're like, oh, 25, 30 maybe, because it's over the hills, I'm doing 22 today, everything like that. For the entire trip from Cape Reinga to Bluff, they did like 22 to 25 Ks every day.
Comfort zone.
Comfort zone. And they're like, how have you done, how are you doing this? Are you an athlete? Have you done ultra long? I was like, no. I'm the same as you, except I've been in my growth zone for the last 90 days and you've been in your comfort zone.
Mm.
And that what built me up to the end. And you know, at the end, I must have been pretty much the fittest I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, when you said, I'm running, like, I'm doing marathons every day. And I'm like, who is this guy? Like, yeah. I know you're, you don't look at, you don't look like an athlete. You don't eat like an athlete, that's for sure. But you're, you have a physical fitness about you that kind of belies
the look of you.
You look like a normal guy, and then, but you can just do amazing, amazing stuff. Your body allows you, and your mind certainly allows you.
My mind allows me, and my body keeps up.
I was very proud of you for that. I couldn't do it.
But you know, there's a point. You can do it.
I could.
You could do it. Okay. If you started at the top.
I don't care to do it. I don't want to do it.
If you started at the top and you've been in your growth zone. And so it might not have been the same distances and speeds as me, but it would have been for massively me, huge, more than when you'd started.
Of course. No, I get that.
Whereas and the people weren't.
I'm the same as you. I like to push towards the end harder than I do at the start because I don't know, prove a point to myself, don't I?
Last question, what is it?
Last question. This is, I don't know if you want to find this interesting or not, but your entire life is built around understanding mental fitness and having concepts and ideas around what that is and what that looks like. So how did this experience reshape your understanding of mental fitness?
Again, I'm not sure it did.
Okay.
I don't think it reshaped my understanding of mental fitness. I think that it reinforced my understanding of mental fitness.
Beautiful.
I think it reinforced, like, literally the story I just told. Like, you get mentally fitter when you go in that growth zone over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And because when I, like, and this is the thing that sort of makes it really hard to explain in terms of mental fitness and physical fitness, I can tell you the numbers for the physical fitness thing.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you the numbers for the mental fitness thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's as big a mental fitness component in being able to do that as there is a physical fitness component. And so, you know, the resilience that is gained by putting yourself in, I mean, I wrote a newsletter about this a couple of weeks ago around choosing discomfort.
Yeah.
Choosing uncomfortable situations in order to make your life more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what this is. Like, it is not comfortable to walk from the top to the bottom.
No.
It's not comfortable on your feet, your legs, your body. It is not comfortable when you sleep. It's not comfortable what you eat.
Yeah.
It's not, nothing about it is comfortable. And yet you come out at the end feeling more comfortable than you've ever felt.
Mm-hmm.
You feel more capable than you've ever felt, which is a component of mental fitness, right? To be capable is to be mentally fit.
Absolutely.
People who are not mentally fit are usually incapable of many, many aspects of standard
normal life. Yeah.
And so it was just a very condensed and extreme example of turn up, do the work, get the rewards. Real simple.
Bravo.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of this whole saga, really. This is kind of the end of all of
me walking the entire length of New Zealand.
Not that we're not going to talk about it again.
No, that's what I'm saying. This is the end of it. We're finished talking about it.
In the podcast, yeah, but it's going to be a story for the rest of your life, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. People still ask the questions all the time and everything, but yeah, like...
I'm sure it will come up in future episodes as well because though you say it hasn't reshaped your idea or your understanding of mental fitness, it has, like you said, reinforced your own teachings and your own wisdom.
There's a lot of analogies that I can take out of it that I use in my teaching, which is great.
Isn't that why you went?
No, of course. But I mean, yeah, well, what I'm saying is that there's no more stories to tell. No more big episodes on it or anything.
Find another video on your phone and go, oh, hey, I forgot about this one.
So yeah, I hope that gives you a bit of an understanding about what, why, how, and what I learned along the way. I'll tell you right now, I hope to New Zealanders and to the people outside of New Zealand listening to this, I hope it gives you a little bit of motivation to go out and do it.
Mm.
Like, even if it's just section hiking, where you do 3 to 5 days, like the adversity that you can gain in that, the knowledge, the understanding, the feelings that you can get by doing that are still wonderful. But yeah,
that would be a sense of accomplishment for me. I mean, I'm happy to go camping, hiking, whatever, probably not here in Mexico because of snakes and fire ants. But if you said to me, we're going camping in the jungle for 3 or 4 days, the insect part of it would bother me.
Yeah.
But I would feel very accomplished if I had gone and done it.
No, exactly. Go try some things. Get in that growth zone. You will absolutely not regret it. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next time. Bye now.
That was Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. See you next time.